From across the country to around the world, you're listening to Terra Informa. I'm Hamdi Issawi.
And I'm Natalie Raweth. And we'll be your hosts for the next half hour of environmental news. On this week's show, we have our eye on the Wild Rose province, Alberta, though not for its advantage.
Imagine stumbling into a pitch-black mineshaft with no canary, no idea where you're going, or even where you are. Well, in a sense, this has been the experience of some northern Alberta communities for a few months now. Only they haven't stumbled anywhere. It's the mine that's come to them.
On October 31st of last year, well over 600 million litres of wastewater poured out of the tailing ponds at the Obed Mountain Coal Mine and into the Athabasca River, making it the largest spill of its kind in Canadian history. Now, more than 4 months later, inquiring Albertans are still in the dark as truth surrounding the spill has proven to be about as clear as the muck itself.
What effects will this disaster have on waterways, wildlife, and the well-being of neighboring communities? More on that story to follow, but first, conservationists are running afoul of developers and calling for emergency action to protect a bird with plenty to grouse about. The sage grouse isn't the only thing ruffling feathers in Alberta right now. Have you ever felt like you've been left out of the loop by those in the know?
This is a situation many Albertans have found themselves in weeks following the Obed Mountain Mine release, the biggest coal sludge spill in Canadian history. Trevor Chow Fraser and Morgana Folkman attended the second public forum about the mine release on February 27th. The event was organized by the Alberta Ministry of Environment, Sustainable Resource Development, and the University of Alberta's Water Initiative. They shared their findings of the independent scientific review of Sherritt International's Obed mine release remediation plans. Here's what they learned.
On October 31, 2013, at the Sherritt International Obed coal mine up in northern Alberta, a berm around a tailings pond burst.
What's a tailings pond? Well, it's where a mine keeps all of the wastewater left over after extracting coal ore out of the rock.
So what this means is that almost 700 million litres of water and 90,000 tons of sediment drained out of that tailings pond. It's the largest recorded coal slurry spill in Canadian history, the second biggest in North America.
The water alone is enough to fill 240 Olympic-sized swimming pools.
A very vivid image for me was the description of the creek that the Obed spill first poured into. Originally, 1 meter from bank to bank, the force of the water from this spill ripped the trees out along the edges, expanding the width of this stream to 20 meters.
The spill ended up in the Athabasca River, about 5 kilometers away. At this point, the plume is believed to have extended to Lake Athabasca, over 300 kilometers downstream. With a disaster of this scope, you're probably wondering, well, why did it happen? And more importantly, what possible health effects will this have downstream? And what are the environmental impacts that have already taken place?
The Alberta government recently gave everyone the opportunity to try and find some answers to these questions. In late February, they hosted a forum that brought together a number of experts and key stakeholders.
First Nations chiefs were there, river keepers and water keepers, spokespeople from the coal company and from government, and 4 scientists from the University of Alberta Water Initiative.
In November 2013, Alberta Environment and Sustainable Resource Development engaged the University of Alberta Water Initiative to provide an independent third-party scientific review of Sherritt's response plans. This is to ensure that the plans are in keeping with the Alberta government's Environmental Protection Order.
So what was the environmental impact of the spill? It stretched from the origin of the spill near Hinton all the way down to Lake Athabasca, quite a long distance. Unfortunately, we can't know the long-term effects until more data is collected, which is especially difficult given the expanse of the spill, as well as the fact that all of these waterways are currently frozen. I spoke to Tim Jardine, assistant professor at the School of Environment and Sustainability at the University of Saskatchewan. He's a member of the Water Initiative, and after the forum, he spoke to me in more detail about the impact the spill will have on the area and especially on the fish.
Typically, fish, anything that's capable of moving often will move. So if there's sediment that's suspended in the water, that's being carried by the water, the fish will sense that. They'll smell it, they'll see it, they'll taste it, and they'll move. Of course, if the speed of the water is so high, the fish may lose their ability to swim against that current and maybe wash downstream. And in the creek immediately downstream from the release site, those trees along the banks provide very important cover for fish. They cool down the water, they filter nutrients and pollutants that are coming off the land. So those trees that grow along the stream banks are very important, and right now those trees are gone.
Are you concerned about any like toxic substances in the water that might affect, how would that affect the fish?
Yeah, so there are two concerns. One is what's called acute toxicity, so that's the immediate toxicity associated with that. From what I've read of the documentation, it suggests that the company did some testing on fish, and they didn't find any toxic effects. The bigger concern is what would be considered chronic effects, so long-term effects, particularly for those chemicals that will accumulate, that will increase in the animal's tissues over time. And we know the general principle in toxicology is the dose makes the poison. And so if an animal is accumulating those toxins over time, they may not be immediately affected, but eventually the concentrations will reach some point where they do become toxic.
So just as we don't yet know the impact on wildlife, it'll take time to assess the risks faced by First Nations and others living downstream.
We did collect sediment, as I showed you before, from those locations, and those are being analyzed for quite a comprehensive suite of parameters, including some not so common parameters like various isotopes that will help us to fingerprint this material and track its location along the bed of the Athabasca River, both right now and in the future. So we should be able to tell what the long-term fate of this material was and how it's going to behave in the environment.
It's important to note that while the coal slurry will not have any immediate toxic effects, chronic effects may be a problem. This is because of the fact that the river's frozen and the amount of time it takes to determine the fingerprint of the slurry and the fact that it isn't even known how far the plume may have actually traveled. Here's what we do know so far. Data provided by Sherritt's own scientists shows excessive silver, arsenic, and lead in the water, most dramatically in the days right after the spill. Within the plume, there was 760 times as much lead as can be found in waters further south.
So in terms of health impacts and in terms of environmental impacts, there's a lot of uncertainty. And as we wait for the scientists to come back with harder facts, people are getting restless. Managing relations with those potentially affected is really crucial for the government and for Sherritt at this point. But so far, there seems to be a lack of trust between downstream communities on the one hand and Alberta government and Sherritt International on the other. Downstream communities complained that they weren't notified of the spill directly by the company. And they complained that information about health risks kept changing in the weeks after the spill, so they didn't know what to be concerned about.
Many of the downstream communities are First Nations, and they are some of the most vocal stakeholders in the forum. Because I wasn't able to catch up with First Nations leadership at the forum, I spoke with Dr. Makary Stewart-Harawira. She moderated the first public forum in December, and I wanted to get a sense from her of what the actual input from Aboriginal groups has been. It was strongly emphasized during the forum by both Sherritt and the Alberta government.
My name is Makary Stewart-Harawira, and I'm from Aotearoa, New Zealand, and I'm a member of the Waitaha tribe.
Yeah, it's about consultation, but you know, what they also were talking about was monitoring, being involved in remediation, being able to use their own local specific, historically long-term knowledge to say these are some things that need to be looked at, these are some ways that we need to be addressing these issues, rather than a one-way flow of information, which is, okay, this is what we're doing, we're letting you know this is okay, this is not okay. So what they're experiencing is this kind of barrage of, as somebody said, emails going their way that are purporting to provide them with information, but it is not about giving them real contribution and real participation. That's my concern. There's a history of problematic relationships between First Nations and government. So, of course, there's a great mistrust, and there's a great mistrust for science. Not for science per se, but for the way in which scientists privilege their own form of knowledge, of course, over Indigenous knowledge.
So coming out of the forum, it seems the big question is, how can you build trust among the affected groups when the science says that we need to take our time to plan things carefully? No charges have yet been laid in the disaster. There hasn't even been an explanation of why the berm broke to begin with. To top it off, Sherritt doesn't even own the mine anymore. Sherritt sold Obed a few months after the spill, selling it to Colorado-based Westmoreland, but it is still responsible for funding continued cleanup.
Certainly, we're not proud of the event that happened that evening, and we're sorry that this release took place from our site, but we're committed to making it right. A huge part of making it right is recognizing and having a deep respect for Aboriginal people's rights. We've been committed to and are continuing to build upon our commitment to meaningful dialogue with Aboriginal communities and the communities around the areas of the mine and the Athabasca River. We will continue diligently to execute authorized activities under the Environmental Protection Order and to meet any outstanding requirements. We will be working with regulatory authorities, scientific and engineering experts to understand the long-term impacts of the release.
There was a definite attempt by Sherritt and the initiative and the Alberta government to appear transparent and like they were involving First Nations groups. However, Sherritt admitted that they were currently only talking with 4 of 50 groups that they had initially contacted in the weeks after the spill. In my mind, the most interesting part of this whole trust-building exercise is that Alberta Environment felt it had to bring in outside experts to review their work. This says to me that they realize how little the public trusts government and industry scientists to be impartial judges.
Our opinion was that we engaged Water Initiative to provide us with the best science forward. And so what we did is we simply passed on their recommendations to Sherritt. We didn't edit them. We didn't change them in any way. We simply passed all those recommendations on with the sort of thought that being that it's up to Sherritt, if they don't want to implement some of those recommendations, that they have to provide us with scientific reason as to why they don't think those are necessary.
The university water experts appear to be experienced and dedicated to their work.
Group of us, we're completely independent. We're not consultants. We are scientists with a significant and sincere concern for the environment. But what we really want to do is make sure that the science is done properly so that we can do a proper assessment. We want to make sure that the science is appropriate for the people and for the rehabilitation of the land and the water for everybody.
Reporting for Terra Informa,
I'm Morgana Folkman.
And I'm Trevor Chow-Fraser.
That was Morgana Folkman and Trevor Chow-Fraser discussing the 2013 Obed Mine Release Public Forum at the University of Alberta in Edmonton last month. Thanks to all those who participated and allowed us to share their views. More about the release is available on our website, terrainforma.ca.